Welcome. Jump into the Compassionate Leader Circle podcast, where leading with love isn't just nice, it's genius. I'm Laurel Donnellan.
And I'm Daryl Brown. We'll unpack business strategies infused with empathy and action, driving both profit and purpose. Our world is ever-changing, so discover how the savvy leader wears compassion as their power suit.
Hello, lovely listeners. Welcome to a special series on the Compassionate Leaders Circle podcast. I'm Laurel Donnellan here with my dear friend and co-host, Daryl Brown. Join us as we dive deep into our personal journeys, sharing stories from different stages of our lives. In each episode, we'll interview one another about a chapter, starting with how we grew up and ending with where we are now. We will be discussing our history and the lessons that shaped our lives and approach to leadership. Daryl, welcome back to our series about life and leadership, where we're telling our stories. So enjoyed hearing your story about childhood through high school. I'm curious what your reflections have been about that experience since.
Well, that's a loaded question. I'll tell you, after I did that podcast, I had a lot of deep feelings about where we went when I revisited all of the things that happened those early years, those first 18 years, you know. And I don't know if I really told the whole story, because actually growing up where I grew up was very sweet in a lot of ways. It was very comfortable in a lot of ways. It was very loving in a lot of ways. You know, it's kind of easy for me to, in this age of, you know, post George Floyd and did you do what you said you were going to do post George Floyd, it's very easy for me to talk about all of the issues that had a negative impact on me, because it did. But those issues also moved me to in a way that led me to where I am today. And when I say moved me, it moved me. When I had to do 150% to be recognized, that helped me in ways that, you know, when I got to the corporate world, I knew that if I wanted to shine, I had to deliver 50% more. So that enthusiasm and passion that drove me in athletics as well as the corporate world was as a result of all of the things that that wanted to make me feel I wasn't good enough early on. So that's the positive spin on that, you know. And I also wanted the audience to know that too.
I was reflecting on your story, and I felt like it was a privilege for me to listen to it. And it was very painful and moving and educational all at the same time for me. I so appreciate that because of the color of my skin in this country, I had a different experience. I could never have the same experience. But I can learn from others that have that experience if I listen carefully, and it helps me be a better person. So I appreciate you being so vulnerable. I'm also so impressed because I've seen it up close and personal about your tribe of people that you grew up with that you're still close to. And I just think that's so rare, especially because we're all moving across the country. And could you just talk a little bit about those friendships and how you've maintained them and what they mean to you now?
Sure. I love talking about my guys And it's not just guys, by the way, but we grew up in a time where, it was the 60s, it was the late 60s, and things were changing, right? Society was changing. We're coming out of Camelot and going into, we went from Camelot to hippies and from a JFK to Nixon. So what to think about that? Don't trust anybody over 30, right? Those types of things were big. So, and to go through it with someone who shared, you double dated with and had your first beer with and played football and basketball and ran track with, and talked about, growing up into a teenager with. So to still be with those guys today, it is so special to me that I have a love for these guys that I would, I don't have any brothers. I do have them. And we you have to be intentional. We are intentional about getting together at least 4 times a year, at least 4 times a year. And we're intentional because life is busy. We're all grandfathers now. Life is busy, but even experiencing being a grandfather, how do you do that? How do you relate to somebody who's 7 years old again, right? When you're 71, so there's special times. One guy I went to kindergarten with, the guy, Mark, who I went to kindergarten with, lives about 30 minutes away from Daryl Jr., who's in college. He's gone to all of his games when I couldn't get to the games from Dallas. Mark has showed up. He's brought him a sports drink. He's moved him. Daryl Jr.'s things from college are in Mark's basement so that he doesn't have to move them back home. He's been an uncle that unbelievable, unbelievable.
Yeah, I work with young people and adults who actually work on how do you make friends and how do you sustain relationships. And I think there's a lot of wisdom in intention and cadence. You can't let years go by, you know? I always like to think about, I know I will see Daryl and Jean Ann at Christmas, because every Christmas I go to Austin, I go to Dallas, and that is minimum for in-person time, and it makes a difference, you know?
There are special times, and this world and leadership is how do you handle love, right? How do you handle that? How are you compassionate with our fellows, right? And unless you learn how to do that, everybody's going to have their own space and retreat to their own tribe, right? And not be able to listen to anyone else. And deep listening is really what it's all about, right? That's why me and my guys, we've stayed together because we listen to one another. We don't, and each one of us went off to different colleges in different parts of the country, but we went to each other's fraternity parties. They came to see me play at Madison Square Garden. I went up to Bates in Maine, went to Northeastern. So that's what we
How
had to
beautiful.
do in order to stay together. And we've done it now for 60 years, feels like.
That's so amazing. It's so beautiful. Okay, well, speaking of college, I'm excited to hear about your journey from high school to your beloved Fordham. And maybe we'll see how far we get. You can talk about your college experience and early career, if that's good for you.
Sure. Those were what a transition it was from bucolic Rockland County, where I was, sitting on top of the world, down to New York City. But let me go back a little bit.
Yeah, sure, of course.
When I was 8 or 9, my parents had friends who lived in Harlem. And we used to drive down from Rockland County to Upper Manhattan into Harlem. But we used to drive down the West Side Highway. And driving down the West Side Highway, especially at night, was like magic for me. I would see these big buildings and these big lights and the allure and the power that New York City had to offer. I wanted early on in life. So that when I was a senior in high school, I went to a game. I was being recruited by Fordham. I went to Madison Square Garden to see Fordham play Notre Dame. Now, I was recruited by a lot of schools, but at this game, Fordham, which is it's a mid-level school. Notre Dame was ranked, I think, fourth in the country at the time, and Madison Square Garden was packed, 20,000 people in it. And Fordham beat Notre Dame that night, but I'll never forget the experience of being in Madison Square Garden and having the cement shake. It was the most amazing thing, and Fordham upset them, and it was big. It was big news in New York City, so that stuck in my mind. And so when I was being recruited by Fordham, that's what I wanted to do. That's exactly what I wanted. I wanted to play. I wanted to be. I wanted some of that New York City big life. I really did. So I accepted the scholarship to Fordham and went down. It was only 45 minutes away from Nanuet, where I grew up. And I was no longer a big shot because there were guys at Fordham who played, they played city ball, and city ball is a lot different than Rockland County ball. New York City ball, that's where they played in the Rucker League. They played in the West 4th League. They played, that's where you really learn the game.
Is it more
And I,
physical? Is
well,
it rougher? Was it rougher?
it's more physical, it's faster, it's more talented. People do things that I'd never seen before. People will dunk on you if they have the opportunity. They'll play defense on you like white on rice. It is the it's amazing. It's amazing.
It's a whole new ball game for you.
A completely whole new ball game. And once again, I had to fit in, right? I had to find a place there, right? And I didn't know if I could do it. I said, "Oh wow, I thought I was good. I'm not that good. I'm not that good. I'm not New York City good." Right? And I started to doubt myself early on my freshman year until we were playing some pickup ball, and I don't know what happened, but something snapped, and I blocked one of the big guys who was on the varsity, blocked a shot and did a couple of things. Then all of a sudden you gotta earn respect, right? And on the basketball court. And it took a while, but I did. And from that point on, I had a high people had a higher view of me. Other players had a higher view of me. But Fordham was still 95% white. And only basically the athletes were black, and it was a commuter school in the beginning. This is 1971. There wasn't a big campus life, but everyone who lived on campus, there weren't. It was just 95% white again, and it was Nanuet in Rockland County all over again.
As an
But
athlete, were you living on campus? Who lived on campus versus commuted?
all athletes lived on campus. And we lived in the same dorm. So my roommate was, his name was Walter Douglas. We call him, he was from Jersey City. And if two black boys could be so totally different, it was Walter and I, right? He came from, he had a harder life than I did. And but we learned to live. He was my roommate all 4 years. I was the best man in his wedding. He was the best man in mine.
Oh, beautiful.
We grew together. We grew and we grew to love one another. We grew in a way that wasn't, it was extraordinary for me, because I had never known that kind of closeness, and I love that. I love that. And we're still together today.
Was that your first relationship outside of your family with a black man that was your friend?
No.
Okay.
But when you're living, when you're rooming with someone, there's an intimacy there that transcends any intimacy that you've ever had before. Okay. And you talk about more things, you feel more things.
Well, being a roommate for 4 years is through like such a important part of life.
Yes. So, in a Fordham that we had suites, and there were four rooms and two people in each room. So there are eight people in the suite, and the basketball players all stuck together. So we had some upperclassmen, and I really wasn't accepted at first, because I would listen to James Taylor and Carole King, and they would listen to and they were listening to not James Taylor and not Carole King. They didn't know where I was coming from. They really didn't. And I don't know that they even cared as much as they just knew that I was different. I was just a different kind of guy. I remember as a freshman, I had to referee. We lived in E House, E7, and I had to referee a basketball game between E House and F House, F8. And I think F8, that's where all the white ball players lived. Anyway, I called a foul toward the end of the game against someone who lived with me, a black guy. And it was the right call, but they didn't understand how I could make that call. They really didn't. My roommates
You
didn't
were
understand.
like, weren't being loyal. You're being
Yeah.
honest.
And one guy came up to me a couple of days. I was like iced out for a while. One guy came up to me afterward, and he said, a black guy, Kenny Charles, came up to me afterward, and he said, "Now I get you. You just did what you thought was right." I said, "Well, yeah."
So
I was
I'm
like,
curious though, were the dorms segregated?
no,
Okay.
they weren't segregated, but they were segregated for us. They just figured that the black guys would want to hang with the black guys, and the white guys would want to hang with the white guys. Now, had they known a little bit about getting to know one another and trusting each other on the court, they would have intermingled us, as they did my sophomore year. I mean, and on. They did do that, but my freshman year, oh no. No.
They were just trying
So,
they were trying to help you out.
yes, trying to help us out.
So you are in college on a basketball team. Tell me
Yeah,
about
on
the
the football team,
academics. You go
Well,
ahead.
first of all, I going to Fordham. Fordham is a Jesuit institution, and we were taught by Jesuit priests. I think I had three or four Jesuit priests as professors, and I was an English major going in, and I wanted to go to law school. Fordham had a great law school, and Jesuits have a different way of teaching. They really teach more about character and who you want to be, and that's kind of instilled in you. Jesuits believe in that men for others and people for others. The women who went to Fordham at the time did not get a Fordham degree. They got a I can't remember the name of the school, but it wasn't a Fordham University degree. And they went to the same classes, right? We were all in class together, but their degree was not a Fordham University degree. Now that changed too, my junior year. So there was a lot of change going on.
Yeah, there's a
But
lot of
the
change
classes.
going on that should be going on, right? But it's
Yes,
amazing that you
yes.
lived through that. It when I think about that wasn't that long ago, but it, you know, in the
No, it was
scheme of this
1972.
country, maybe
Yeah,
for
it was
you and I,
19.
it's not that long ago. It may sound long ago for some of our listeners that are younger, but for us, it's not long ago.
So I didn't know, going my freshman year was all about, going to keg parties and trying to fit in and who am I going to hang out with and who accepts me and who doesn't. And it was very interesting. And eventually, everybody finds their place. I did not know that everybody was going through the same thing I was going through.
We
So,
should tell people right now that if you're in college and you're feeling like you're the only one, you're not.
you're not. Everybody has those same feelings. I also want to say that my freshman year was there was a thing called the draft lottery. So we were 18, and when you're 18, you had to register for the army, and there was a lottery. You got a number, 1 through 365, and if you were under 100, you were going into the army. Forget about college. There was no deferment for college. It was no nothing. And I was number 91. So all of a sudden I had this beaten down on me too, going to school, fitting in, and thinking that my number's gonna get called my second year here in college. So it's a lot of pressures, and at one point I was definitely I wanted to go home. I was done. And I remember my assistant coach Seth Hicks talked me out of it. He just said, "Hey, listen, you're one of the leaders of this team. We need you here." And I think it was at that time that I finally felt like I had a place. That there was
Were
something
you
there for me.
feeling you weren't performing well as a basketball player? Is that why you wanted to go home, or you're just not
I
fitting
didn't,
in, or?
I wasn't feeling comfortable with any part of my life. My girlfriend was back in Rockland County. I don't know, she, I don't know, even know where she went to school. I can't remember. But I had no girlfriend. I had no the social life. Who knows? My basketball, I was not considered a city player. So what was I doing there to begin with, right? And I no longer had any identity, right? Even though the outside trappings of being a high school star brought on a lot of false, but identity things that you
You
could
had a
claim.
brand.
And I had none of that. So I wanted to leave. Seth Hicks, the assistant coach, talked me out of it, told me I had a place there, told me that I was one of the leaders of the freshman team, and that I really needed to stay. And I did. And things started to turn around by Christmas time. I remember going home in the spring, and I went to a track meet. And I wore a Fordham, big Fordham thing, because I was so proud that I had stuck the year. I had stuck out. I stuck it out that year. It was an accomplishment for me, and knowing that I had a place there. Yeah, that feeling of acceptance was really important. I was also in the second class of Afro-American Studies, right?
The second
Taught
class
that
ever
course
taught at Fordham in that
ever taught
subject.
at Fordham. That's right. So there were big things happening in 71 and 72. And of course, the whole Watergate saga, the draft, the lottery, what was going on in Vietnam. We were still, and the whole hippie thing was still big. So I got through freshman year, and I don't think that my GPA was anything to write home about. I can't tell my kids about that though. I mean,
It
it
will be
was.
my it will be my secret, but I do hope they listen to this
Yeah,
podcast.
no, yeah. I get on Andrew, my youngest. I said, if you're not bringing home a 3.0, we're wasting our money. I don't think I had a 3.0 my freshman year. As a matter of
Andrew,
fact,
I hope you're listening.
yeah. As a matter of fact, I
But
know I didn't.
Andrew's gonna do better than that because he's got a great coach.
Yes, he does. Yes, he does. For free, no less.
But I love the story about your coach, assistant coach Seth, because it does remind me about how one conversation can just be so critical
Yeah.
to
Well,
someone's
I was
life.
so my senior, my junior year in high school, Catherine Walber, my English teacher, that was a critical conversation when she told me that you could write. She said you could write, which went moved me to be an English major going into college. And then that winter, when I was ready to quit and go back home to Nanuet, Seth Hicks, who was the black assistant coach, said, "No, you have a place here. You are one of the leaders." I heard that, and he said it in a way that made me believe and have faith in myself, right? Gave me that extra oomph to do more, right?
To keep
And to give more.
and reach your potential rather than, I think so
Yeah.
often people think that they need to be talented right away, that they need to be successful right away. And over, I just hear that the most successful people are just people that didn't give up. It wasn't, they just didn't give up.
Well, I think the point of it was, number one, don't give up on yourself. But number two, who knows what the future holds, right? Who knows what the future holds? Who knows how much better you could be in whatever your chosen field, right? I didn't know. I didn't know that I would go into college and, and do as well as I did, right? I thought that I just wanted to play, and my sophomore year in college, I came in and I started on the basketball team. And I started on the first team that Fordham had that started five black players. It was the first team in their history. Now I had an okay sophomore year, but I hit a sh I play we played against Notre Dame in Madison Square Garden.
The
And it goes back to my
vision comes
story about
true.
yes, we're playing in Madison Square Garden, playing against Notre Dame. They weren't highly ranked. We were both doing, we were okay. But I hit a shot with 4 seconds to go to beat them. And all of a sudden, I had found the place inside of me that where I wanted to be in terms of being comfortable, being confident, being assertive. From that point on, I was much more assertive on the court, much more assertive in practice, and much more assertive in my academics, because I decided my sophomore year that I wanted to do something in broadcasting. I didn't want to be an English major. So I switched majors to communications. And what a great move that was, because I knew I wanted to be either in front of the camera or I wanted to be in management, because I wanted to make decisions. again, be in a leadership position. So a lot of things happened that sophomore year that changed my life in ways that I didn't know were going to change. They also did away with the draft. So that number 92 was no longer hanging over my head.
That was a good part of the story. Things are getting rosier sophomore year for sure.
Yes. And sophomore year, I also found a girlfriend. So I think, and we were together all throughout my college years. So, and I didn't know how important that was to me, but it was a connection that that I needed to have.
Was she at Fordham? Did she come to your
game? And it
game?
Was a new life. She was. Yes, she came to all the games. And she didn't go to Fordham until she did. But she lived in Riverdale, and it was a sweet relationship. It really was. And she introduced me to another group of people, where one of the guys, Joe C, they all had Italian backgrounds. They were either Italian or Irish, one or the other. And anyway, Joe C and I talked to him this morning. We're still together, right? So that was a really good. I loved the end of my freshman year going into my sophomore year, and my basketball. The progress that I made in basketball was also on the way up. And again, I never thought that I would be a college. I just wanted to play. And I started to play really well. I was a completely different ball player in college than I was in high school. Completely different. I had to change my game. I had to be much, as I said before, much more assertive. And I loved it. I loved the change in me as a person. I think it changed me as a, that growing into manhood. I think it changed me too. And my roommate and I went through a lot of travails that sophomore and junior year together. And I lived with a couple of guys. Now it's no longer an all black suite that we had. We had guys who just wanted to be together. We were all sophomores and we just wanted to be together. And we were, and we stuck together. We're still together to this day. I have such great relationships from that sophomore year and junior year and senior year. Fantastic relationships. Again, I was in all of their weddings. I was the best man in one. I presided over a wedding of one of their daughters. I mean, it's just a wonderful, wonderful experience that I had at Fordham. Went on my junior year and started really getting into communications. I worked at the radio station and a little bit when I could, and also started doing well in school. And by my senior year, all of a sudden I started being mentioned as a professional NBA prospect, which I never thought about playing in the NBA. Never. I never wanted to. I never aspired to. I never thought that I had the goods to do any of that. I knew that I better get my studies and have my studies in order and my academics, have a solid academic base, because I needed to get a job right after graduation. But my senior year, things changed, and I just had a great, great senior year athletically. I mean, my basketball, I I had some really good, I had another great game in Madison Square Garden in front of a crowd of people that I dreamed about back when I was 8 or 9 years of age.
How wonderful.
Yeah, we upset a team that was ranked 5 in the country. They were the fifth, USC was ranked 5th in the country, and we were 17 point underdogs, and we wound up beating them by 17. And again, the Garden, Madison Square Garden, was electric. New York City was electric. Howard Cosell reported on our game, and I remember being on NBC News, local news that night. I wish I had that clip,
I was like, we
because
need to get
I
that
said some.
clip, Daryl.
I know we need to get that somehow.
We can find, well, maybe Finn can help us. We need to do some research.
Oh yeah. I thought I was, I again got ahead of myself. And what I remember saying on that clip that we were 12-3 at the time, and that game beating USC, I thought we could beat anybody. So I remember saying on that clip, bring UCLA out here. We'll take them on. And UCLA, this is UCLA. UCLA. This is when they were like had won 88 straight games. So
Who were like the who were the famous basketball players on in your like during that time at UCLA? Do you remember?
Bill Walton was playing my sophomore and I think my junior year. He was the star. He had just left my senior year because he was a year older than me. He just recently passed away, and talk about a superstar
Yeah.
in all forms of life. He
So
was, and
you were
he
saying
gave
to
me.
NBC News, I can beat those guys. I can
That's
beat
right. That's
them.
right. Yeah. That was unbelievable.
I'm
Unbelievable.
ready.
I was full on.
But
Talk about being,
hey,
yeah.
you upset the number
Talk about
five
being full of
team.
myself. Yeah, well, we weren't quite ready for that. Anyway, I was prepping. All of a sudden, I needed to start getting prepped to play in the NBA. And I remember going home that spring before the draft, and someone wanted to be my agent from Rockland County, a lawyer. And he said, "Hey, I'm gonna have a. I want to introduce you to some people. Why don't you come over to my house?" And it was summertime, springtime, and I said, "Sure." So I got dressed up in one of the suits that I had, and I went over there, and I looked around, and the people he had serving there were friends of my mother, and it was one of the most awkward moments of my life because I was now again, who was I going to be? Where is my identity? And where was my allegiance? And it was the weirdest feeling being served by
Your mother's friends
my
who are
children.
hired by
Oh my God. It was
a lawyer.
awful. Yes, it was awful. He didn't know. He just hired some people, right? Who catered parties, home parties. And so I was very uncomfortable. I'll never forget that. I'll never forget that. I went back. I remember that my senior year, I also was in a scrimmage that. In a drill, a basketball drill, and somebody rolled over on my foot. And this was before the season was over, and I broke a bone, my fifth metatarsal, and I didn't. So I was out for 7 games. And this is when I was averaging 27 points and 14 rebounds a game. I was like third in the nation in scoring, and I don't know where I was in rebounding. Anyway, I went from a top three, third round draft choice to a fifth to the fifth round, and fifth rounders, you got to work to make the team. So that was also a really difficult time I had enjoyed success all my college career, and that injury, I went from averaging 27 points a game down to 20. Now, averaging 20 points a game is nothing to sneeze at, okay?
But you're
But going from
competitive and you're
27,
competitive with yourself.
well, competitive with myself, and the NBA scouts look at numbers, right? And when you drop from averaging 25, 27 points down to 20, and averaging 14 rebounds a game down to 10, something's wrong, right? Which is what hurt my draft status. But I graduated, and I know I had a 3.5 that semester because I was an academic All-American, and I'll never I hold that near and dear to my heart, because I knew once again that I better do it in the classroom as well as this deal that I had, this NBA prospect that I never knew I would be, right? So I was drafted by the Boston Celtics, and Boston at that time was not known for being welcoming to people of a different color. Bill Russell talked about that. But the Celtics, Boston was the exact right place for me, because they'd stress defense and rebounding, and that's why I said so. So I went. So that was kind of my college career. I hung out with a lot of my girlfriend's friends. We would go out to the Hamptons. I'd never been out to the Hamptons, the second beach. I didn't know there was a beach out in Long Island. So, and my friends were from Long Island, and Inwood, which is I think part of the Upper Bronx or Upper Manhattan, and Long Island City. I just got to see a different part of the world, right? Even though it was within 40 minutes of campus. So I learned a lot about the world. I learned a lot about myself. I learned about how to be compatible and intimate and vulnerable to a fellow black man, right? Walter and I, we still tell each other things that we don't tell anybody else. So yeah, I absolutely loved my college years. So much so that I still am associated with the university. I try to give back, and try to help those who were less fortunate, than I was, especially those freshmen coming in. I talk to them every year. I talk to freshman ball players every year, give them a little pep talk about what to expect and what not to expect. Do not expect that you're going to be the big man on campus anymore.
That's so
So those are
wonderful
my
for
college.
them. That's
Yeah.
wonderful. Can you tell the story of how you went from English to communications, and was there help? Did you just have an epiphany? Like, what happened? How did you figure that out at such a young age while you were doing basketball, while you were in a new setting?
At Fordham, you had to take theology courses. You had to take so many theology, so many philosophy courses, and so many English courses. And as an English major, I saw where I was headed. I took Shakespeare my freshman year, and it was okay, and I did okay, but I didn't love it, and I think I took a broadcasting 101 course too, and I absolutely loved the idea of mass media, right? I absolutely loved it. And when I was in high school, I was a stringer for the Bergen Record and the Rockland County Journal News. So I reported on games, back then. So I had the bug, and I was in the I was also as a fresh my freshman year, I went up in the booth at football games, and I was a spotter for the PA announcer. Number 52 on the tackle, number 47 caught that pass, and right. So I love the whole idea of broadcasting, whether it be journalism or actual broadcasting early on, right? So when I took that Broadcast 101 course at Communications 101 course at Fordham, I said, this is what I like. This is what I'm really passionate about. This is what I could see doing for the rest of my life, right? I didn't know what it was going to be, but it was going to be something in this field. And that was the decision. It was an inside job. It really was. I didn't have the passion for English. I didn't want to write. I didn't want to teach. I didn't want to get a master's in, I didn't want to, what was I going to do with being an English
Well,
major?
it's a
But,
good thing you got the opportunity to contrast those two things and learn to trust yourself, right? Like I mean, it's good to try things out, but I love that you found your inner buzz and you trusted that, and that led you to a decision. And that was a very, it wasn't a guidance counselor telling you what to do. It wasn't your parents telling you what to do. It wasn't your basketball coach telling you what to do. It was Daryl trusting himself.
So I want to tell you that it was part of the Jesuit education. All of those courses that I took, theology, philosophy, St. Ignatius and the Jesuits, it's really all about self-examination, right? That's what it's all about. And to this day, that's what it's all about. My program is all about it's constant daily self-examination, but they teach you that their academic process is it's all about building character, right? So reaching inside and finding out what made me tick, as far as why I was there, it really wasn't a stretch because that's what I was being taught to do that.
But that's
So it was
wonderful that you
great.
were
It was
actually
great.
apply in college, you were applying what you were learning in college, and it affected your entire
Exactly.
life. And that is, it doesn't get better than that.
It really doesn't. It really doesn't. I will tell you now. I will tell you the end of the story, however many times we do this. I will say it all the time. I have led a charmed life. Charmed. I have been gifted in ways beyond compare and will be eternally grateful for the things that have been laid out in front of me. Now, I had to go get them. But for the number of golden opportunities that were in front of me, that I had to, the passion to go after. Right, that's what Fordham University did for me. It came, they said, go after it. If you feel it and you believe it, go after it. And that's what I did. I think it helped me in basketball. It helped me in my studies. And so when I went up to Boston, I was just, I got up there and I was just going after it. I made it from rookie camp, which was, there were a lot of good players. Let's talk about when I my freshman year in college, and there were a lot of good city players. When I went up to Boston, there were a lot of good players, other draft choices that were a whole lot
Well,
better than
you're
I
in a
was.
national
And
professional stage.
well, the fact I was so proud of the fact that they chose me. I mean, I was like I said before, it wasn't part of my dream. I
Yeah,
wanted to make a lot of
it's
money.
whether it
I
was or
wanted
not,
to
it's
take.
impressive.
And I wanted to make a lot of money, and I wanted to have power in New York City. That was my dream. I didn't know how I was going to do it, but I was going to do it. So when Boston took me, it was like, oh wow, look what happened, right? So anyway, I went up there. I played as best I could that rookie in rookie camp, and I got invited to regular training camp And in training camp, there are 17 players. They have to cut it down to 12. And every day, every few days, it goes from 17 to 16 to 15 to 14. And, by the time preseason is over, they're down to 12. All right. So I got cut early in my first year. But what they said to me was, work on your game. We want you to come back. And again, what I heard them say is, you have a place here if you work for it. So I had an agent. I went over to Europe. I went to a lesser league in Sweden. I didn't go to Italy. I didn't go to any of the bigger named countries that had a very competitive, because I needed to handle the ball. I needed to play guard. I needed to shoot. I needed all those things that would make me a better player by the time I got back to Boston that second year. And I did. We won the championship. We were 32 and 0 over in Sweden where I played. I had a great time. I took Swedish lessons when I was over there. I tried to keep up my academics side and keep learning. And I had a very formative playtime too. Let me just say that. Okay. When I was in Sweden, I took advantage of everything that Sweden had to offer. But when I came back to the States, I was a much better ball player. I was bigger. I went back to camp. They were surprised I was the same player. I did what they told me. They told me I had a place and I played like it. So, but it still didn't work out. I got cut 2 days before the season started after having a great preseason. They wrote about me in the Boston papers, being surprised that I was the same player who got cut early and couldn't even shoot the ball the year before. But I didn't get cut. I got, they retired my contract. They kept my rights because they said, come back next year. And I started seeing the tea leaves, and I said, you know what? Every year, another group of young kids are coming up, and
You're
I
getting
don't
older,
want to do this
they're
another.
getting younger.
I was home that winter, and the head coach at Fordham said, if you want to come back here, I'll pay for any grad school you want if you work with the young kids. I said, I'll see you in September. So
Beautiful.
that's what I did. Yeah, it worked out well. I got my master's in communications management, worked as an assistant coach. And within a year, within 2 years, I did my internship at WMCA in New York City. I was a gopher for the morning team. I would go out and get coffee and bacon and egg sandwiches. I was excellent at it. I was excellent. And they would steal in morning drive. They would steal traffic and weather from winds. And then I would write it down and give it to them. Then they would report it like 5 minutes after WINS, which was the old news station, after they did it. Anyway, it was a crazy
There's a
day.
hack for you.
Yeah, yes.
But
But
as
when
an
I was
intern,
in
you just
graduate
have to
school,
pr pretty much do what people tell you to do.
I
And
was
you
do I
did.
did what I was told.
Bacon,
And I
sandwiches,
did it.
whatever,
Whatever it was, right? And I learned a lot. I was still playing basketball. I would play semi-pro ball, got $150 a game to pay for my rent, because I was living off campus. I would play down the Jersey Shore, and I would come back at 1 o'clock in the morning, sleep on the engineer's couch, and get up to be there at 4:30 for morning drive, right? And that's how I got through grad school.
What did you study in grad school?
I was my major was communications management. So I got my master's I got an MA in communications management. And I learned how to be a manager in the field that I loved. So I got out in a couple of years, started looking for a job. And within a year, I landed a job from a fellow Fordham alum at ABC Radio. And my office was two or three doors down from Howard Cosell's. And I learned a lot. I learned a lot that first year.
And one of the many unusual things about you is, tell us how long you worked at ABC Radio Networks.
I worked at the ABC Radio Network for nearly 30 years.
Yeah.
So I went from being, I was hired as a, from a Fordham alum who was the vice president of ABC Radio. He was going to get his own personal secretary. That's what they were called back then. And instead, he hired me for $17,000 a year. And I was the manager of special projects, which meant they didn't know what the hell I was going to do. But they could just, again, I was like a glorified gopher. It's crazy. It was crazy. Making $17,000 a year.
You got to be with your dream team. Howard Cosell was down the way. You were in New York City. And it was the beginning of a really incredible career that we will talk in length about in your next podcast. But before we leave this part
can't
of your
wait for
life,
that.
I'm sorry?
Can't wait for that.
Yeah, I'm excited about that too. It's just lovely being with you and hearing these stories, even though some of them I've heard before. I'm getting new information. It's really fun. So any lessons from this part of your life that you'd like to pass on to listeners and your sons and anyone else? Maybe Lena, maybe you're going to listen someday. Lena's Daryl's grandchild. She's fabulous. She's seven.
You know, if there's anything, there is no way that we know what the future holds. So projecting into the future is it's folly. It's mere folly. I will say that self-examination, always examine your motives, always. Examine your motives and follow your passion. Because if you're motivated to do something, right, you'll feel it inside. And if you're passionate about doing something, well, I'll just say this, be passionate about doing something and have faith that my higher power is God. I have faith that you are being held in loving hands. Have faith in that, that you're going to be taken care of. And that whatever happens, somebody's always holding your hand. Yeah, that's what I would pass on.
And what I heard today, what I'm taking away from today, in addition to all those things, is it's okay to envision and it's okay to dream big. You have to have fun with that. Not every vision may come true exactly the way you thought of it, but I'm thinking about someone going to Madison Square Garden and looking at the lights of New York City and, you know, all those things and having that experience. And I think sometimes people forget to dream and they're not okay with it. It's also trust, and then trusting yourself, that self-examination is so key. But the other thing I'm taking away is be deliberate about friendships and honor them. And I think our society puts so much pressure on romantic relationships, and there's so many movies about romantic relationships. I think friendships don't get the cred that they need, and they don't get the nurturing and the intention, and all that is so beautiful.
You know, especially guys' relationships, right? Because we're supposed to be tough. We're supposed to be, you know, we'll get, you know, we can do it on our own. We could, you know, to have vulnerable friendships from way back when that you can still talk to and know that you can call on. And, you know, my best friend, who, the guy who makes Daryl's drinks, he had twin sons and one passed away. The four of us knew how to hold him up.
Yeah.
Right? We knew we had to be there to hold him up because it was our responsibility to do that. Right? We all felt it. We didn't have to say anything. We were just there. And those types of relationships, they're lifelong, but they take work. They take work.
They take work.
You know, the other thing I wanted to say, Laurel, before we end is this. It is great to dream, but you'll never know that dreams do come true, but you never know how they're going to come true.
Or
for
when.
me, they came true in ways that were very, yeah, or when. For me, they came true in ways that were unbelievable, right? Just unbelievable. It doesn't always happen like that, right? And I've told my eldest, you know, your dream big. It'll happen, right? It'll happen. It may not be in the way you think it's going to happen, but dream big.
Yeah. Lovely way to end. I look forward to our next time. Thank you so much. Great being with you.
Always wonderful being with you.
And that's a heart-wrapped episode of the Compassionate Leader Circle podcast. May your compass always point to kindness.
As you navigate the world, let compassion be your North Star. Join us next time as we continue to redefine success one heart-led decision at a time.
Lead wisely, lead with heart. You can learn more about us at CompassionateLeadersCircle.com.